Sorry, that was a mouthful, and it's not entirely related to what I'll be sharing with you today, but but I thank you all for this opportunity to present this project entitled Towards a Patient-Centered Model of Maternity Care. I don't have any financial conflicts of interest to disclose. So this issue has been sort of well-documented but remains fairly poorly understood, and that is the ways that disparities in access and utilization of prenatal care contribute to the inequities to inequities in maternal and child health outcomes. In sort of the last decade or so, the expansions in access that had initially accompanied Medicaid reforms throughout the 1990s have really plateaued. And while sort of that gap managed to narrow, disparities continue to persist. So that as of 2005, at least, African American women remained more than twice as likely to receive inadequate or no prenatal care as compared to their white counterparts. Access was sort of originally studied in, or I guess initially studied in terms of utilization and adequacy of prenatal care, with a number of studies early on kind of looking at risk factors and predictors that were identified from large database analyses. So looking at birth certificate data, ICD-9, Medicaid sort of claims data. But that type of analysis or perspective on access, particularly focused around utilization, sort of missed the boat in terms of understanding sort of components and quality and satisfaction with care. So in more recent years, qualitative and survey studies have tried to examine and understand women's experiences in prenatal care and their perceptions of access and barriers to prenatal care. And that's helped us sort of broaden our understanding of access to consider not only sort of affordability and availability, but also sort of accessibility, acceptability, and accommodation in this setting. And in 2009, Filippi actually reviewed like the last two decades worth of literature on this issue of sort of women's perception of prenatal care and really distilled the volume of barriers that have been enumerated into a framework sort of containing three major domains, one of which is sort of a maternal domain that captured issues around motivation, health beliefs, fears. Another domain, the second of which was structural, which primarily focused on clinical concerns, things like wait times, hours of operation, cost of care, child care, you know, on-site child care. And then finally, sort of this provider set of concerns around communication skills, cultural sensitivity, attitudes in terms of caring and respect in the course of providing care. And so this work, you know, really reflected the fact that authors have enumerated and created these fairly sort of long laundry list of concerns in terms of barriers, but there hadn't really been much work to try to understand how women prioritized these types of concerns and what sort of the relative importance was among this these vast lists that continue to grow as this work is being done. And so the purpose of our study was to explore what low-income African-American women valued and prioritized in prenatal care sort of across these domains of maternal, structural, and provider components of types of barriers. We wanted to utilize a community-based participatory research framework, and the overall goal was really to try to inform future efforts to develop patient-centered models of maternity care and create interventions that would improve attendance to prenatal care, sort of consistent attendance to prenatal care. And more specifically, we aim to qualitatively explore facilitators and motivators of prenatal care attendance among low-income African-American women. And with a nominal group technique, we wanted to determine how women rank or prioritize barriers to attendance across the three domains. And in doing so, I partnered with a community partner called the Maternity Care Coalition, which is an advocacy agency that's based out of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. They serve low-income women and children through a home-based visitation model in which community health workers that are known as family advocates basically go around and mom-mobile minivans, and help to link families with prenatal and pediatric care, behavioral health services, nutrition programs, and other types of community resources. They also provide case management and health education throughout the pregnancy as well as through the child's first birthday. And the mom-mobile program serves roughly 3,000 families annually. Really, among their top priorities are to try to help their clients initiate early care and maintain consistent prenatal care. And based on that, they had, about a year prior to the time that we partnered to pursue this project, they had surveyed some of their clients and identified this milestone approach that a number of their African-American women in particular were taking toward prenatal care, wherein they really were just sort of hitting the big milestones, going in for intake, for their ultrasound, for any kind of lab visit, but then sort of foregoing the intervening visits, or and rather than sort of deal with the wait times and the challenges that come with attending their clinic visits, would end up addressing, you know, problems through emergency care. And so we partnered, in part, a lot of this project came out of their interest in trying to understand with a little bit more depth some of the how and the why women were choosing to attend or not attend prenatal care, and what it was that they were expecting, valuing, and prioritizing in that process. I wanted to just note that, you know, we did sort of try to apply principles of community-based participatory research in this project, and I just wanted to highlight a couple of things that I felt like we were successful in doing very well. First was just communicating the sort of the advocates and their clients as sort of a distinct community, and trying to understand the culture within that organization and within within those relationships. And then building on really a very well-established sort of trusted relationship and well-established networks within the community that MCC sort of brought to the fore. In terms of facilitating partnership in all aspects of the research, like I said, a lot of the very original study question was really developed out of work that they had previously sort of begun and wanted to move forward. And then from developing our focus group, our focus group script, to conducting our focus groups and conducting the analyses, we really were able to partner in each of those aspects of the project thus far. And in terms of just mutual benefit, again, this was really directly related to sort of their advocacy agenda and the services that they wanted to improve in being able to provide for their clients. And so I'll move away from that, but I'm fairly proud of the work that we were able to do. As for our methods, we conducted 5 2-hour focus groups. They were comprised of 22 African-American women who were recruited through the 5 Philadelphia sites that really the family advocates recruited our study participants. And our focus group scripts were broken into 5 sections. We first asked women just what they valued or found important about prenatal care, and in doing so, we would just ask them, you know, how important is it to attend? How important is it to attend early? Does it matter how often you go? We talked about motivators once you go, what keeps you going. The third section really focused on barriers, and that's where we utilized this nominal group technique, first asking them to just list 3 things that had made it difficult to attend all of their prenatal care visits. And then after we sort of went around getting everyone's input, we create sort of laundry lists of barriers, and then sort of go in subsequent rounds of trying to reach consensus about, we'd ask them again, okay, now from the larger group, take 3 things, and then we would continue in rounds of subsequent discussion until consensus was built around what people thought were really the top issues or challenges facing women. The section that followed really asked what types of services might help folks overcome these types of challenges. And then there was a final exercise where we sort of led folks through a create the perfect prenatal care system exercise, where they were asked, what is it that you like about the experiences that you've had that you'd keep, and what is it that you don't like that you'd change? So the focus groups were digitally recorded and transcribed verbatim. They were coded in an iterative fashion using a grounded theory approach. And we had 2 independent reviewers that coded the transcripts. And we ultimately resolved discrepancies by virtue of consensus. We used in vivo in order to just facilitate the analysis. As for our results, our study population, as I said, comprised of 22 women. On average, they were about 25 years old and had two children. Roughly a third of the group had a history of a high-risk pregnancy, and about two-thirds were single. Half the group had a high school diploma, and the vast majority were actually insured, primarily by Medicaid, however, about three-quarters of the group were unemployed. Most were receiving social support services in the way of WIC or food stamp recipients. So barriers to prenatal care attendance that that these women focused on really fell into structural and maternal types of domains, with insurance and transportation being at the top of their list, but followed by maternal concerns about sort of ambivalence, lack of motivation, lack of social support, and fear or worry. And because a number of those components really related to maternal, this maternal domain, the primary sort of facilitator that women talked about was increasing social support and social group types of supports for pregnant and parenting women in order to sort of promote or facilitate early attendance and maintenance of attendance to care. Other things, they certainly found that rides and voucher kinds of programs were helpful in overcoming the transportation challenges, but what was interesting is that even in the midst of that sort of space with these focus groups, a number of women had either never heard about these programs, didn't know how to access them, and so it sort of came out of that discussion that they felt like there was a need for increased awareness, sort of public awareness about these resources if they're to have sort of the maximum impact. As far as motivators, the participants really identified family and friends, actually. More of the literature has typically leaned toward the health of the baby, but our participants really identified family and friends as being the primary motivator to help them sort of consistently continue to come back for their visits. And that was followed by concerns about the health of the baby, and I guess the flip side of that coin being this worry or anxiety that if they didn't show, something would go wrong. This just really depicts the rankings that came out of some of the nominal group session, and it really, the second piece it does is brings out some of these sub-themes, particularly in this area of ambivalence and lack of motivation. There was a fair amount of discussion around contemplating abortion, denial, the fact that many folks thought that prenatal care just wasn't particularly important or beneficial, fatigue and depression. And then within the fear and worry category, sub-themes came out around sort of judgment, fear of physicians, fear of something going wrong, or just simply fear of the unknown more broadly. When asked what they disliked and would change about, like in a perfect prenatal care system, the responses fell into four categories. Physician, I'll be explicit, physician relationships, the fact that they wanted mom's needs prioritized more, they wanted more information about resources, as I earlier alluded to, and also they wanted decreased wait time. But by and large, actually by far, the most salient and frequently addressed concerns about what they disliked about the current care that they were receiving sort of surrounded the relationship and behavior of providers, and more specifically, really, physicians. There was a fair amount of conversation contrasting midwives and doctors. One of the things that they were particularly, or the most concerned about, was this lack of personal relationship and connection. One of our participants stated that maybe, you know, the prenatal people could humanize your visits and not make you feel, well, you know, you're measuring small or you're not gaining enough weight. Maybe if they shared their stories, like if you were my OBGYN and talked to me about your daughter, then I would feel like I could talk to you about things that I'm going through. And another said, we all have to have that connection. We want to feel personal. We want to feel special. Sometimes we're lonely. Sometimes we don't have anybody to talk to at home. We need like 5 minutes, you know what I mean? Just to listen. And sort of in a similar vein, they really disliked the discontinuity of care. And in particular, they voiced a lot of frustration about physicians needing to sort of read the chart over and over again and ask them the same questions. And what was interesting as a provider is that, you know, that's sort of a normal and some would consider necessary component of care. But for our study participants, they really felt like it drove home this depersonalization component. And so they shared things like, you know, and then you have to read up on, then they have to read up on your chart, and you become a paper patient, as I call it, because they briefly read over you, you know, your diagnosis, what you're going through, but they have no connection to you. You're just this patient, paper patient. And another one said that they didn't know I had a seizure when I was having my daughter. They didn't know none of that. They just started over from the beginning. It was new. Everything was new to them. Each and every time, that was what I didn't like. There were different providers, and they're questioning me. Same questions over and over. A number of the women did share that they've had negative experiences and trainees that they'd encounter. Most felt like they were willing to help and understood people needed to learn, but they were really frustrated about the mistakes. One said, "I know people have to learn in some way, so I really don't mind helping the students out, but I had a bad experience. I had to get checked 4 times. So it was like the student checked me, the doctor that was training checked me twice, and then they had to leave out and get another doctor to check me." And lastly, there was frustration voiced about the lack of caring and compassion, as well as the lack of respect that was shown. One woman shared that, "I just want them to be more, really, you know, caring. I know it's kind of hard to say caring because it's a business, but just to be more caring. It's about us and our children. If you're not mentally stable, you know, if we're not okay, then our babies cannot be okay. Respect, you know, make her feel like she's just like your team. Then, you know, team effort, as opposed to, I'm going to go and be berated by a doctor today about not taking my prenatal pills or whatever the case is, you know. If they feel like both of us are working for the same goal, I think people would be more willing to come." When they were asked about things that they like and would keep in from their prenatal care experiences, a number of women described models of care that were being provided by midwives and serving some of the clinics in the community, as well as their relationships with nurses and staff that would be developed over the course of their prenatal care. And finally, everyone loved ultrasounds. So as far as the midwifery model, they seemed to really appreciate the engagement and having some, consistent with previous literature, having some sense of control. You have access to your chart the whole time. Your chart is yours. You take it with you. You write down your own weight. You're responsible for that. I did my own test to find out that I was GBS positive, that I was GB positive, group B positive, I'm sorry. So you feel more in control of your own health. I think if I was in that type of field, I would follow a similar model. Make them feel more capable, and it makes the person feel more engaged in their own health care, you know? And another say that you have control of how you want things done when it comes to your delivery, rather than obstetricians. They don't give you the option. They tell you how you're going to do it and when. And sort of in contrast to the lack of connection and continuity that they were experiencing with physicians, the participants were describing sort of forming bonds over the course of repeated visits with a lot of the clinic staff and nurses. And of those experiences, they said, you know, their experience, the way they connected to us, they didn't hear us, they listened to us. They took it upon themselves to take it a step further when we needed that extra. Yes, we became not a paper, but a patient. We were human. We were like a sister, a mother, a friend. We were somebody to them. The final point is that they like ultrasounds, and this is useful for someone, particularly as a health services researcher who thinks a lot about overutilization, underutilization, resources, and technology. It's a little helpful insight that one of the participants explained really well. She said, "It's an introduction to your baby, information to actually see it and actually know I have life. Made it feel real to me, like, wow, I'm actually going through with this to be a mom." And so in closing, we found that our study participants were primarily motivated by family and friends. They recommended increasing social support and transportation services, as well as increasing awareness of resources to facilitate attendance. We found it interesting that even in this relatively highly insured population, that insurance and finances remained the primary impediment that they listed as a barrier. And we also thought that it was interesting that when discussing the priorities, when discussing barriers, they prioritized structural and maternal domains. But when they talked about their preferences for care, it was really heavily focused on the provider domain. Our study certainly has some limitations related to generalizability and perhaps selection bias, since this was a relatively engaged and motivated group by virtue of being MCC clients, probably had more favorable views of prenatal care overall. That being said, we think there are important implications to this kind of work. Future efforts to address disparities will certainly need to develop more patient-centered models of maternity care. And for us, it felt like really a call for relationship-centered care on every front when we talked about what motivated them, family and friends, what they thought would facilitate care, a lot of social support and social groups. And when we asked them, you know, about their experiences in care, they were really concerned about their relationships and compassionate care from their providers. We felt that group prenatal care may hold promise of offering much of sort of the needed, at least, support and education that women were calling for. Either way, you know, in the face of sort of reform and as we're facing increasing resource constraints, it's going to be imperative that when we sort of begin these conversations, that we start them by asking women what they need, what they prefer, and what they value. I just want to thank you all for your time and all of my co-investigators and funders.